And as partially as a result of this process and other actions that we've taken over the last 3 years, Dallas County now has 20 DNA exonerations. And then two capital murder exonerations that did not involve DNA testing, and that the Court of Criminal Appeals, or as John Lentini referred to them, a Court of Criminal Affirmations, actually signed off on and ratified as a legitimate exonerations. So I'm going to talk briefly about some of the specific cases that we've worked on, some of these 20 DNA exonerations. Every one of the cases are incredible. And every one of them, are amazing stories in and of themselves, but I only have a few minutes. So I just want to give y'all a sample of what we've done. And if my PowerPoint worked, I could put a face to some of these names. The first one is a Thomas McGowan. First one is Thomas McGowan. This was a brutal home invasion sexual assault that occurred in Dallas County back in 1985. McGowan became a suspect several weeks after the offense when he was arrested for a misdemeanor and was driving a vehicle that was somewhat consistent with the vehicle that the perpetrator was driving. As a result of that, he was put in a photo spread and picked out as the perpetrator. Now, that is actually a separate story in and of itself. But anyway, as a result of that, he was charged with aggravated sexual assault and burglary. That was basically the evidence against him, this eyewitness identification testimony. He had two different trials, one for the aggravated sexual assault, one for the burglary. Two different juries convicted him. He got a life sentence in each case, and the judge stacked the life sentences. So he was doing two stacked life sentences for this offense, which, based on the heinousness of the offense, would have been appropriate, except that he didn't do it. Fall and spring of 2007 and 2008, we tested the DNA. Long story short, it was not his. DPS put it in the CODIS system. It belonged to Kenneth Wayne Woodson, who was serving time in a Texas prison for an almost identical offense out of Dallas County that he committed after he committed the one that Thomas McGowan was convicted of. And something that I just can only classify as bizarre, it turns out Woodson was in the same photo spread with Thomas McGowan, the actual perpetrator, but was not picked out by the victim, and McGowan was. To me, they don't even look that much alike. We did send our investigator out to talk to Mr. Woodson in prison. He did give a full confession on audio tape in which he recounted the details of the offense. And there is a letter of apology that he wrote to the victim of the case. I'm running out of time quicker than I anticipated. I'll go through some of these cases. Stephen Phillips is a truly interesting case, but if you are in the bar later this evening, I'll tell you about it. Phillips is the guy in the upper right-hand corner. The actual perpetrator, as identified through DNA, is the individual in the other two pictures. Patrick Waller, he was one of the first to apply for post-conviction DNA testing. He was denied because he was technically convicted of aggravated kidnapping and aggravated robbery, not sexual assault, even though The sexual assault was an integral part of the proof at his trial. And in fact, blood typing taken from the sexual assault kit had indicated that he was part of the 13% of African-American males who had that blood type, had the same blood type as the rapist. We went back and tested the DNA in that case, even though he had been turned down for testing. And the DNA in the CODIS check revealed that it was actually a Byron Bell, who likewise was in prison for another offense, who matched the DNA. Mr. Bell ultimately confessed and identified his co-actor, Lamondo Simmons, in that case. One last case, this is pretty interesting. Gregory Wayne Wallace, another home invasion, sexual assault. He became a suspect because the victim mainly could identify what police believed to be a unique tattoo that the perpetrator had. They did a composite. It was posted at the jails. They were soliciting informants, and informants said they knew a Greg Wallace that had a tattoo similar to that. He was put in a photo spread. The victim picked him out as the perpetrator. There's a picture of Greg Wallace's tattoo. It's actually a little bit, as you can tell, it's in a different position and actually a little bit different than the composite. DNA, our subsequent DNA test showed that he was not the perpetrator. That's the composite. That individual right there, that's a picture from him back then, was the actual perpetrator. We found him, sent investigators out to the federal pen to talk to him. He's changed a little bit. he would not talk to us, but he did take his shirt off, and that's a tattoo that he had, which is actually much closer to the composite than Greg Wallace as far as the position it was at and what it actually looks like. There's Wallace's down his arm. At which, that was a big issue at trial, but as you can imagine, there was an elaborate and clever explanation for why the tattoo was initially described in a different place than where Greg Wallace's was. So anyway, in conclusion, let me quote from the Herrera case in Justice Rehnquist, which, after all, the central purpose of any system of criminal justice is to convict the guilty and free the innocent.